Thanks for downloading this podcast. I'm Kelly Beatty of Sky and Telescope magazine, and tonight we're going on a tour of the stars and planets that you'll see overhead during July. We're just a few weeks past the mid-year solstice, so that means the days are very long here in the Northern Hemisphere, and the nights are short. And true darkness is even shorter. Here in the Boston area, for example, the last bit of twilight lingers in the west until about 10:30. That leaves only 4.5 hours to revel in the star-spangled night before dawn begins to creep up in the east. Fortunately, right now there are some wonderful cosmic treats in view, and for this month's sky adventure, it'll help if you can find a spot with a completely unobstructed view towards south. Remember how last month I helped you spot 4 planets at one time before dawn? 4 at once isn't particularly rare, but it's always a treat to glimpse some of those other worlds of our solar system. And June is a month of transition, planet-wise. One of those 4, Mercury, is slipping from morning to evening visibility, though you'll have to wait until nearly month's end to see it lurking very low in the west after sunset. Another change involves Saturn, which has graced the early evening sky since February. But now the ringed planet is bidding us adios. You'll find it glimmering low in the west as twilight fades, only about 10 degrees up an hour after sunset. It's now on the far side of the sun from Earth's perspective, and that alone makes Saturn seem dimmer. But it's even fainter because those beautiful rings aren't boosting the planet's brightness. The rings are nearly edgewise to our line of sight, and in a telescope they look like a thin line crossing Saturn's midsection. Keep the horizon in view as you sweep to the left from Saturn by the width of about 4 fists at arm's length. You'll encounter a bright solitary beacon with an icy white color. That's Spica, the anchor star for the constellation Virgo, the Maiden. Now keep going to the left, this time by 5 fists, and stop when you reach the bright star Antares above the southern horizon. Can you detect a reddish tinge to its light? Compare its color to that of Spica. Antares is strikingly similar to the planet Mars in both color and brightness, and that resemblance gives the star its name. Antares means, literally, rival of Aries, which is the Greek name for the planet Mars. Antares is also a close match to Betelgeuse, the strikingly red star in Orion. But Antares seems to have an even deeper hue because we usually see it low in the sky where the atmosphere reddens it, just as the dense air low down reddens the setting sun. Antares is the brightest star in the constellation Scorpius. No, it's not Scorpio, that's what the astrologers say. Perhaps more than in any other constellation, the stars of Scorpius really do look like their namesake. Let's trace out its shape, and here's where having that clear southern horizon becomes important. Antares is the heart of our Scorpion, and close by, to its upper right and lower left, are 2 medium-bright stars representing its body. Less than 1 fist to Antares' upper right are 3 stars in a nearly vertical row that mark the Scorpion's head. Trailing down from Antares is a curving string of stars that form the Scorpion's tail. They head to the lower left and then turn upward, ending in a close-spaced pair of stars at the stinger end. These are sometimes called the cat's eyes by amateur astronomers. The farther south you live in North America or Europe, the easier it is to see the whole tail and stinger. Scorpius also harbors one of the few star clusters that can be seen easily without binoculars or a telescope. It's just to the upper left of the stinger, spaced about the width of 3 middle fingers. This star cluster is the 7th entry in the catalog of an 18th century astronomer named Charles Messier, so it's usually called Messier 7 or M7. But the ancient Greek astronomer Claudius Ptolemy had cataloged it 1600 years before Messier did. He described it as a cloudy star behind the sting of the Scorpion. So this cluster is sometimes known as Ptolemy's cluster. You may have trouble seeing M7 if your skies are awash with haze or light pollution, but binoculars should show it with ease and resolve it into a swarm of individual stars. Now, there is some balance going on in the heavens this month. Even as Saturn declines in the west, Jupiter is ascending in the east. To find it, note where the sun sets, swing completely around, a full 180, note some landmark on the horizon, and then be patient. The King of Planets is a late riser this month, popping up over the eastern horizon a little before midnight. Jupiter will be making appearances a little earlier, week by week, and by mid-August it'll rise as the sun sets. July features a modest meteor shower called the Delta Aquarids. It peaks late in the month, around July 28th, and then you can expect to see about 10 and maybe 20 meteors per hour around midnight and in the wee hours thereafter. Finally, there'll be two eclipses this month, but chances are you won't see either one. First comes a barely there lunar eclipse on July 7th, when the full moon clips the outermost fringe of Earth's shadow, called the penumbra. 2 weeks later, at new moon, the aim is dead on. In fact, eclipse chasers around the world are counting the days until July 22nd, when the lucky ones among them will get to view the longest total solar eclipse for the next 123 years. Totality is longest, 6 minutes and 39 seconds, from a spot in the South Pacific Ocean. And that's where I'll be, along with my wife and hundreds of newfound astro friends on a specially chartered cruise ship. I sure hope the sky is clear. It'll be an awfully long trip home if we're clouded out. Next month, we'll look for some steam coming from a celestial teapot and what that has to do with the Milky Way. Until then, I wish you clear skies.